Izzy makes a sacrifice for her daughter, Christina paints her nails, and Meredith adopts a mommy. Musings on all that and more in today's official Grey's Anatomy podcast, hosted by ABC.com. Well, it's a time of change for Seattle's finest doctors. Out with the old and in with the new. The new being Ava's fresh features and the old, well, Christina's old flame. But even though Marlo appears to be on his way out, what do his parting words possibly mean for the soon-to-be Dr. Christina Burke? To find out more, we turn it over to executive producers Shonda Rhimes and Betsy Beers. They'll grace us with their insight and wisdom into what's coming up in our next episode, Desire. That episode airs Thursday, April 26th from 9 to 10 p.m. on ABC and is available the next day at abc.com.
Hi, I'm Shonda Rhimes.
I'm Betsy Beers. This is Grey's Anatomy. Feels like we haven't done this in a while, doesn't it?
It does feel like
it. It feels like we took a little break.
You know why, American people? Because we've been on hiatus from you a little bit.
We have. It's been a bit of like a hiatus from the American people. But now we're back with the American people.
As if we weren't in America.
No, exactly.
The presidents like, always say things like the American people, as if they're not.
Sounds like exactly, or there might be in another place that isn't America.
That isn't America.
But just so you guys know, we have not left America.
We haven't left.
We actually haven't left our offices.
Yeah.
I think is pretty much the
truth. We've been busy making shows for you.
We have, and we've really been having a good time. So the time kind of flew, and we forgot that we actually haven't been blathering like maniacs for you on a public basis for America.
It's been a while.
It has, but we're back. We're actually here to talk about...
Time after time.
Time after time, which also, of course, speaks of time passing. How's that for a name? And a lot of stuff actually... I love this episode because there are a lot of things in flux, like heavily in flux and sort of in the stage of, oh my God, what's going to happen?
Yeah, there's a lot of the characters are in these big decision-making
periods.
Transitional places, which I think is really interesting. The thing I was most excited about was Izzy's daughter coming back from bone marrow transplant, which I've been fairly obsessed with since we decided Izzy had a daughter at all.
Which is true.
And I kept saying, we've got to bring her back for the bone marrow transplant. We've got to bring her back. And everyone kept saying, but, like, she's not sick. And I was like, but she is. We're making her sick right now.
So she got sick during that period of time that they talked about it.
And
needed the bone marrow transplant.
Yes. And I really loved it because when we did the storyline about Izzy talking about having a daughter and giving her up for adoption, it was really beautiful and felt really sort of full circle and whole. And I felt like Katie Heigl did an amazing job with it.
Incredible.
And then it was something that we sort of never talked about again. And that was purposeful because it was Izzy's secret. But to me, one of the best ways of using this secret was the intimacy that she shares with George. This idea that George is more to her than just a friend, that they have this great bond and this great friendship, that she would go ahead and reveal this to him was really amazing to me.
Absolutely.
And it was a really good way to show how strong their relationship actually is, despite everything that's happened.
And then the one thing, I mean, that he actually doesn't even listen to her when she says, I want to be alone. You know, I want to do this by myself.
He
transcends all that garbage and goes in and, in essence, lies to his wife again because he's doing the right thing for Izzy.
He's doing the right thing for Izzy.
And he's there for Izzy and he can't tell anybody because Izzy doesn't want anyone to know about it. So he's being the most incredible family member ever for her in this weird way.
And yet denying his own family because... Counts his family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I also love this parallel story which is going on, which is a different kind of maternal story, because what I love for Izzy is that this girl is her daughter, and even though she doesn't get the satisfaction and the release of really meeting her and having time with her, she still realizes that the important thing about being a mother is what you give with no expectations in return. But the way that connects with the Meredith story with Susan...
Yeah, it's really wonderful because here we have sort of an adoption of sorts in its own way of Susan sort of having decided to be Meredith's mother in any way she can and Meredith really not allowing her to. And Susan's sense of responsibility that she feels towards Meredith, the responsibility she feels to take care of Meredith because of everything that happened when Meredith was a child. She didn't force Thatcher to try to spend time with her. She didn't get Thatcher to fight for her. She feels this enormous sense of responsibility to take care of Meredith because of that. And it is a nice parallel.
It's really, the two things connect really well.
Dear God, do you let me think?
I know you people are so clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, Grey's Anatomy were much cleverer than we thought. But I think it's also that in a strange way, Susan just keeps bashing at the door with no real expectation or hope that it's going to be reciprocated, but there's hope. Now, what we got to tell you right now is we have people in the room who record the podcast.
Very worriedly at the equipment.
And they're staring at the equipment, which is kind of awesome. So we may be garbled or jumbled in some way, which would be kind of exciting.
Or we may do the whole thing over again and not sound nearly as good.
Oh, no, actually, they're giving us, like, astronaut high signs
so wait,
that everything's
but
okay.
But I just want to qualify that it might not be okay. And so if you hear the podcast and you think it's boring, it's not our fault.
It's because the recorder,
something happened.
The device was with the, it was tainted.
It had a boring meter.
It was exactly.
Yeah.
It had a big boring meter. Like the studio audience voted us off the island.
Yes. Anyway, my favorite moment of the George and Izzy story, back to that, is just the moment when George takes her upstairs to the daughter and Izzy won't look and George is describing her.
Oh, it's so good.
And he says, and I just love this line. She has a big mouth, which means she probably talks a lot and eats a lot. You know, like yours. And it's very charming. Like, there's just a lovely moment, and you sort of go, like, he loves Izzy so much.
And he loves everything about her. He loves the good and the bad. But he knows her.
And then Izzy stands up, and she gets to see her little daughter with the little bald head and the leukemia. It's all very
beautiful. And has the courage to do that. I really feel for Callie, though. You know, I continue to feel for Callie.
I continue to worry about Callie. I have to say that I'm actively, at this moment in time, worried about Callie.
Yeah, I know. I know why. I mean, it's... She's in an absolutely impossible situation because the truth is she loves George. She believes in George.
I was going to say, the thing about Callie that's really interesting is that all along she's believed that George is a better man than he is. Now, not only does she believe he's a better man than she believes that he's a better man, she believes their relationship has a stronger foundation than it does. She decided a long time ago that George was the one, and she's been waiting for him to sort of come around to that place, and then he did. But that doesn't mean that he's actually in the same place that she is. So I'm worried about her.
She's hanging a lot on this. I mean, pretty much everything is hung on this relationship. So it's tough to watch. And I'm really rooting for her because I love her.
Well, what I love about her, though, is that she's not this fragile, delicate little thing. And that she would be the kind of person to sort of stand up for herself eventually. So hopefully... Maybe you won't get to that. I don't know. You'll have to watch and see, but hopefully maybe she will.
There is that.
One of the other stories that we did was Christina and getting rid of Marlo, finally. Colin.
In a very not typically Christina way.
In a very atypical Christina way. And what I really loved about it was where it went, which is the moment when she goes into the room in the OR after Park's been a little bit humiliated in surgery and says, "Why did you use those stitches?" And Burke gives her an answer, and she says, "Thank you." And Colin sort of comes out and goes, "You helped me write that paper. You know about that. That, Christina, is who you've become. Like, that's the most disturbing thing in the world, that you don't
exist.
The woman that I thought you were doesn't exist anymore. You have lost something of yourself."
Absolutely.
And then he says, "Best of luck with the wedding," which was very ominous, and especially when said with a British accent. Because as we know, things said with a British accent always sound better.
They obviously sound better and much more truthful. Like, probably you think, oh, my God, he must be right. He has a British accent. But it was, in a weird way, I understand he had to go. I was sad to see him go because I just...
There was something hot and sexy about him.
Really hot and sexy.
Very interesting. And he was a pretty good cardiothoracic surgeon.
Too. Really good cardiothoracic surgeon. I think everybody really stepped their game up. And all the candidates for chief and the race for chief, the stakes just got a lot higher. And plus, he's saucy and he has a good accent, which is, as you said, nothing you ever want to turn down in a situation.
Yes.
And I got to say, one of the things that troubled me most about this episode is the whole Derek, Chief Meredith issue. And the situation that Derek is now finding himself in, which is, you can't win for loving Meredith. Like, you can't win. Like,
that might be considered the theme of every episode of our show. You can't win for loving Meredith
because he's risked so much for her. And yet every single time he turns around, it's somebody saying, you know what? You're not going to get what you want because you love Meredith. It's just not fair. But it's really compelling.
No,
I don't think the chief is wrong.
No, I don't think the chief is wrong either. And the problem is that it's Meredith's world in a sense. Like, she's got the chief sort of feeling this responsibility to protect her. She's got her friends sort of surrounding her. She's got Derek, who's trying to find a way in to somebody who doesn't really... Well, who has intimacy issues.
Yeah, it's
doesn't really
true.
Know how to be in a relationship.
Absolutely true.
And now the very thing that Derek... Because I think Derek came out to Seattle thinking, I'm going to be chief someday.
Mm-hmm.
And this is my ambition, and I don't need women anymore, and I'm going to be chief someday.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Except he picked up a woman at a bar and fell in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's... I feel like he's caught himself doing the same thing that he did before, which is sort of falling mad. Like, he fell, you know, he fell in love with Addison, and sort of he, that was what he did for a while.
Right.
He's always very good at his career, but that was what he did for a while. And now he's sort of intoxicated by Meredith, and it's, he's putting himself in a position to get really, really hurt, and that's what he's afraid of.
You know what? I think that's true. It also goes back to what his sister says in that episode, which is,
yes.
It's that whole idea of you always put the relationship first. It's like you think that you have this balance, but you're never alone, and that there's something about Derek still needing that time where he needs to really evaluate who he is and what it is he wants.
And the chief's not wrong
in his
plan, his thought. So it's a little difficult decision.
It's a difficult decision, but it's also, Derek's just in such a hard place because he loves her so much and he's fought for her so hard, and she almost died.
She kind of doesn't appreciate being fought for.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing that I look at and say, but she can't. And then I look at her and I look at her mom and look what she's been doing. I wouldn't either. So it's a conundrum. But then Bailey always kind of clears it up for me. Like, Bailey walks in and Bailey seems to have a real clear sense of what
Bailey
wants.
Yeah, Bailey says there really isn't a question here. But the problem is, for Derek, there is.
There always is. And I think that's incredibly realistic. So I find that incredibly painful because the chief's right, Derek's right, Bailey's right, and Meredith's right. Everybody's right.
Somebody's got to be wrong.
Well, I'm probably wrong.
Okay.
Usually that's the way it works, so it's okay.
Alex and Ava.
Yep.
Ava's faux family. That's what we called them. We called them Ava's. In the writer's room, we called them Ava's faux family. Ava's faux family showed up. No, that was not really Ava's family, and they just didn't recognize her or something. That's just Ava's faux family. I think the thing that we really wanted the story to tell was both how desperately Ava would like to have some people and have some memories and know who she is again. And also how hard Alex is starting to find it to let her go. How that relationship is starting to sort of wrap himself around him in a way that he didn't expect, which I think is really interesting.
Absolutely. And it's also it's interesting just to watch her progress.
Yes. In terms of, she has a face now.
She has a face, which was a huge relief to me.
It was very stressful for us, you know, because still she has no teeth, if you notice. Her teeth are really messed up. It's a little stressful to look at Ava's face.
And it was a big relief to see that incredibly, that the face that they chose.
But the best part of the entire show has to be Mark as wingman for Richard.
Oh, please.
Anytime.
The saucy duo
of
Mark and Richard.
I mean, I love, like, sort of the chief trying to flirt a little bit in the elevator and the woman's horror and it being witnessed by Mark. And then Mark flirting with the nurse, who sort of just goes all to jelly a little bit.
Like within ten seconds of his mouth. Yeah.
And there's something really charming about that. And then there's that moment at the end when the chief is sitting in the bar and the girl says that she stops him by sometime after class or bio class, and he realizes just how young she is and how far out of the game he is, and he's just devastated. And Addison saves him, which I love.
No, it's great. I think Mark would be a terrifying wingman in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like...
First of all, you don't want your wingman to be prettier than you. Not that he's prettier than the chief, because no one's prettier than the chief.
No, and they're different kinds of pretty.
Absolutely.
You know? But there's a hyper-confidence in Mark, which would be a scary wingman, because that's more than a wing.
But he did a good job.
It's like a center.
He drew the women over.
He did.
He made the conversation about the chief, and then he slipped away.
He did. He's very, very good at it.
Yes.
He's very good, and it's clearly
but I love the chief. I love the chief says, you think if I get you laid, I'll make you chief. And Mark doesn't say anything, just smiles, because it's true.
It's true. Everybody's trying to get for what they can, the way they're doing
it. Yes, use whatever game they have.
Now, we've got a really good episode coming up next week, too.
We do. In the next episode, we do something that we've been wanting to do since...
The beginning of time.
The beginning of the show, beginning of everything that ever happened or ever started.
It's one of these...
pretty amazing, and I don't think we can tell you what it is.
No, but it's a really, really cool thing, which is both wonderful and horrifying at the same time. As is often the case with Grey's Anatomy.
Exactly.
But we're really hoping that you tune in. It's called Desire.
It's called Desire.
And we love it. And that's all we'll say because you know us, because we're just tight-lipped and annoying and like that. Exactly.
But we're very close to the end of the season, people. Coming closer and closer and closer, so.
We are. We're driving right up against that end of the season marker.
So things get more exciting.
They do.
Stakes get higher. Next week.
Stakes get higher.
Higher stakes.
This
is Shonda.
This is Betsy.
This is Grey's Anatomy.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's it for now. Thanks for joining us for the official Grey's Anatomy podcast. We'll be back next week with more musings and recaps for our next episode, Desire. Until then, check out this season's past episodes at abc.com's new full episode player. Desire airs Thursday, April 26th from 9 to 10 p.m. only on ABC.